Thank you. Obviously, we should not solve everything because we still need to be able to write a proposal to get to this beautiful new house. So I want to thank Laurent and Corey for putting together this very nice conference. Do you hear me well? Okay. So we have seen many, many examples of avalanches, a lot of them. And of course, we'd like to understand what are the common mechanisms and if we can predict things. So there has not been that many actual analytical calculations from first principles of avalanche observables. So the aim of the talk is to show that one can actually perform them, at least in the case of elastic interface deepening, and get very precise predictions, which one can test in numerics and hopefully also in experiments. Also, that's a bit more delicate usually. And I will also show you that the class of interface deepening is very broad. And recently, we found how to show that it includes a large number of SANPILES models and reaction diffusion. So this is done in collaboration with Kai, who is here, and a lot of help from Alberto Rosso, who was here. Alexander Drobenivsky, our student, is now in finance. Mathieu Delorme and Timothée Thierry are still in physics. They are actually here for the program. So very briefly, I will tell you how functional normalization group helps to calculate things at the deepening transition and show you the results we obtained already some time ago for avalanche size distribution. Then I will move to the dynamics and show how the correct, quote-unquote, mean field theory for interface is the so-called Brownian force model, which includes space, and give you some results from this model, which some of them confirm a BBM model, others go beyond a BBM model. And then I will show how to go beyond the mean field and obtain results for shapes and so on. And hopefully, if I have time, I will tell you about this unified theory of avalanche in SANPILES and interface. So these are papers you should read if you want to have more details about what I'm going to tell you. There are older papers on the deepening transition. There are some papers on calculation of avalanche size, which we had also help from Alan Middleton on this. And more recent paper on the dynamics. And this is the most recent one, which you can look if you want to have reference and most recent things. I just received this morning the referee report for this paper, so I think it will be eventually published. Hopefully. Can I proceed with my talk? I know you are somebody who asks a lot of questions. I will send you an email if you go on like this. Okay, so elastic interface are parameterized, as you know, by a scalar displacement field in internal dimension D. And this is canonical equation of motion for overdamped dynamics. There is a pinning force, which is nonlinear in the displacement, which of course makes the problem difficult. There is elastic force, which can be either short range or long range. If you have short range, you have upper critical dimension 4, meaning it's mean field above 4 dimension. And long range, typically, I mean, there are many variations, but typically you have upper critical dimension 2. So the driving term has the form of a parabolic well with a quadratic coefficient m square, which provides a mass, if you want, in the field theory. And this parameter m will eventually be taken small because this is producing a length scale, a cutoff length scale in the internal direction of the interface, so which will eventually cut off avalanche sizes and so on. So this term is very nice to write to consider because so the system is driven with this driving function W of t, which is the center of the parabola. So you're driving your system, and it's a nice form to do it. First, because there are many experiments where there is such a term. For instance, in fracture, it is the loading. In contact line deepening, it is gravity, which provides it. And in magnets, it is a demagnetization field. Okay, so in theory, it's also very nice because the mass is not renormalized. You can show it by some symmetry. So it means that you can drive the system at fixed distance from criticality for arbitrary large distance and have stationary statistics. So of course there is a famous Middleton theorem for this problem, which tells you in particular that you have monotonicity. So if the drive is forward and velocity will be forward, and consequence of Middleton theorem is that the elastic interface will, after some distance, always be in an attractor, the Middleton attractor, which is a uniquely defined sequence of metastable states. For instance, if you drive forward by increasing W and then you stop, then the interface will converge to this Middleton state, which is a well-defined, unique leftmost metastable state. So it's unique and well-defined state. And we will define the center of mass of the interface. Okay, so this allows easy definition of avalanche because then it's just simply going from one Middleton state to the next one when you increase the position of the center of the well. And okay, there will be a lot of details in the talk which you don't have to look at, but this is just definition of the size of an avalanche. And of course, you have either smooth disorder, in which case they occur at a discrete set, or you have rough disorder, in which case there will be avalanche at any small scale. And there are typically two protocols, either the steady state, in which you drive at finite velocity, in the limit of zero velocity, or you can also start from a system which is prepared in a Middleton state, and then increase the driving, increase the force which is applied. You produce sometimes big avalanche, sometimes small ones. So this is avalanche following the kick. And if this kick is small, you are essentially, these two situations are essentially equivalent thanks to this Middleton stationary attractor. Okay? Okay, so let me just say a few words about function RG. I will not get into details. You can find them in the papers, just to tell you what it actually predicts. So the proper definition of the renormalized disorder, so that's the definition for this renormalized disorder, is just obtained from the fluctuation of the center of mass, how much it deviates from the driving parabola center. This definition, in my 2006 paper, was used to show to be equivalent to the one you get from the effective action in the field theory for the experts, which is quite convenient and later was extended to dynamics. So this object depends on the mass, and the FRG equation allow you to calculate it as a function of the mass. So it's a equation which you can establish order by order in power of delta itself, and to one loop, two loops, so this is power polynomial in delta. And if you study this equation, you can find how this correlator grows in the limit of small mass, a solution, flow solution of this equation, and they have universal behavior. They go to some fixed point function, which contains information about the critical exponents. The fixed point function, we have calculated them up to order 3, actually. Well, 3 in statics and 2 in deepening. So we know this function. Epsilon is the distance from the critical dimension. And observables can be obtained once you know the function. And I will show you on the next slide that this function you can also measure it in numerics and in experiments. So it's a well-defined observable of the system. So the critical exponents, what's important is we find that there are only two independent critical exponents, the dynamical exponents and the roughness exponent. And the roughness exponent for short-range system, for instance, in one dimension, is predicted to be larger than one, which is what is now, this is the best values now in one dimension short range, and this is a one dimension long range. And in a long range case, we also predicted with a method a value of around 0.4, which was observed by also by Rosso and Kraut, and then observed in fracture experiments by Laurent and Stéphane. Okay, so just to show you that one can actually measure this fixed point function, this is a numerical experiment by Alberto Rosso. And this is the prediction on the same curve, the prediction and the fit, no parameter, no free parameter here. And this, if you zoom, so there is a very good agreement. If you zoom, you can even distinguish one loop and two loop. And you can distinguish the statics and the dynamics. So this is the statics which we obtained by so this is the zoom of this thing. This is the statics we obtained with Alan. And this is the dynamics and the prediction, which are essentially indistinguishable, which we obtained with Alberto. And this can also be looked at in contact line experiment. I won't have time to explain it. The important thing is that there is this cusp here. And this cusp is related to avalanche. More precisely, the characteristic scale of avalanches, so if you look at the scale for the size, the characteristic cutoff scale is related to this cusp. And in fact, you can show that this cusp is exactly the second moment of the avalanche size normalized by the first one. And as small mass, it will have this fractal dimension exponent. And then there is, of course, the relaxation time, which is characterized by the Z exponent. So these are two measurable quantities. If you do a experiment, in principle, you could be able to measure both of them. And in mean field, they have a simple expression because there is no correction to eta, or let's say they are finite, and the same thing for the disorder. But if you are exactly at the critical dimension, there are some logarithmic correction, which we can also calculate. Okay, so just to show you what the FRG gave for the avalanche size distribution, this is the mean field result, which we recover. But then if you go away from mean field in 4 minus epsilon dimension for short-range disorder, but in 2 minus epsilon for long-range disorder, and this is the first order in epsilon, this is the shape of, this is the universal distribution, dimensionless distribution for avalanche size. It contains, of course, the exponent tau, but it also contains a stretch exponential tail and this funny looking factor here, which is telling you that there is actually a bump in the distribution. So this bump, which had been observed for a while, is explained by this theory, predicted. All these numbers can be calculated. And this is comparison with the numerics. So this is the value of the exponent to first order, and it's actually consistent with the famous Narayan-Fisher conjecture, which relates the avalanche exponent to the roughness exponent. And numerically, this conjecture in one dimension seems to work very well. Now, this form has been used, I think, by Stefano in one of his papers, so I was very happy to see that. so let me come now to the mean field theory. Now, we've heard before mean field theory many times, and there was a question whether mean field theory can capture space or not. The answer is that, in principle, mean field theory can capture space. And the mean field theory, which I will tell you about, is really derived from first principles and gives you all information you want about space. Of course, this is for models of interface, but at least it's one example where things can be done in space. So how does this work? Well, you can show, I say theorem, of course, it's not theorem in the sense of Martin Herrer, on KPZ equation, but it's a theorem in the sense that it is, okay, I can bet everything on that it's correct and that it will be one day shown. So the theorem is the following. If you want to know the space-time statistics of the velocity field in an avalanche, then you have to solve this model. It's given by this Brownian force model, which I will define now. Now, there are some conditions, like for any theorem. Conditions is that it's only in the limit of small velocity of small kick. It is only for single avalanche. And it is at large scale. And it is valid for velocities, and it doesn't really describe positions. In other words, it's not a mean field theory for depinning. It's a mean field theory for avalanche. OK, and of course, below the upper critical dimension, we know now how to expand around this model, which I will show you. So what is this model? This model is essentially the model we had before, except that the quench disorder has been replaced by some white noise with some amplitude proportional to the velocity itself. OK, so where is this coming from, and why is it coming from? Well, first of all, the reason why this quench disorder could be replaced by this is because the interface does not revisit the same disorder. It's because of Middleton theorem. So this is an important ingredient in the proof. And the second one is because the renormalized disorder, which I showed you before, has a cusp. And because it has a cusp, you can expand around this cusp. And we show that this higher order term will intervene, but only in higher order in epsilon. So as long as you are above or at the upper critical dimension, you, well, let's say above the upper critical dimension, you can neglect this term. You can write down an equation for this term, and you can show explicitly that you can neglect it. Now, this is like a Brownian landscape, if you just throw away this term. So this is like particles in a Brownian landscape, but they are correlated. They are, coupled elastically, so it's a generalization of the ABBM model to which I will come now. But before I come to the ABBM model, a slightly more precise derivation of why you can replace this by this, you can just do it by calculating the correlator of the derivative of the force, of the pinning force, and expand this correlator for small argument, and again, you can show that this is smaller. So you arrive to the same conclusion. And if you want to really do things correctly, you have to look at it in the field theory. I'm not going to show you, but basically, this is the Brownian force model action, and this is the perturbation. OK. So there are very, very nice things about the Brownian force model. First of all, the center of mass of this interface obeys exactly the ABBM model to answer the question of Bulbul, which is defined like this. It's basically the same model for just a point. And of course, there are some factors L to the D, which you can keep track on. And the second, so it has been solved before by the ABBM model, by Fokker-Planck method. There are a lot of results which are known, and so on. But this is part of a broader solvability property, which is that there is an exact formula for the generating function of correlation for this model. So the BFM model can be solved exactly using this identity. So you can look at any generating function of the velocity field and write it in terms of the solution of a nonlinear differential equation with a source and some prescribed boundary condition. So this property is very nice. It is non-trivial equation, so it's not necessarily always easy to solve. But there are some cases where one can actually solve it and get information about space. So let me just go back to center of mass observables, which are basically results from ABBM, adding results where you can keep track of the volume of the system. And you can also do it for finite kick, which is not always done in the case of ABBM. So for instance, the avalanche size distribution following a kick of size W is given by this formula. So you recover the S to the 3/2, the famous exponent 3/2. But then there is also this factor. So if you look at small kick, of course, you get this. But if you look at arbitrary kick, You find, of course, Gaussian distribution, meaning that the avalanches are in the mean field uncorrelated in the direction of the interface. So duration distribution also gives you interesting, so the usual mean field result. But again, if you are working at finite kick, you go to Gamble distribution, because basically the longest avalanche will win, and along the interface. And you can calculate correction to the shape, which were shown to us before from the kick, and you can calculate joint distribution of size and duration, which we did, and which were shown by Gianfranco in the experiments earlier this week. But the new thing really are that you can also calculate things which depend on space and or on the wave vector. For instance, you can ask what is the distribution of the jumps of a single point of this interface. And in some cases, you can calculate it exactly. And you can also ask about the asymmetry. So this avalanche shape for small kick is asymmetric, as was emphasized today and before. But if you look at finite wave vector, then there is some asymmetry, meaning that if you look at shorter scales, in fact, the velocity are higher at the beginning, if you want. So you can calculate, for instance, this type of objects. Okay, so let's go now beyond mean field. And the first step beyond mean field is to try to get the exponents. So this is a Narayan-Fisher conjecture, and this Narayan-Fisher conjecture comes from the conjecture that the density of avalanche, not per unit displacement, but per unit force applied, does not diverge at the depinning transition. And that immediately implies this. And this is something which is violated in this model on yielding and so on, where you have an anomalous exponent theta. Here, the belief, because I must say there is no strictly proof of it, but it looks that this exponent theta for depinning is really zero. So then this Narayan-Fisher equation conjecture works. So you can generalize this Narayan-Fisher to local size exponents. If you ask, again, the jumps of a single point along the interface, we get a formula like this. So for a point, this d phi would be zero. If it was a line along in two-dimensional interface, this would be one, and so on. So another interesting distribution is a distribution of velocities. In mean field, it is well known. I won't comment on it here, but in away from mean field, it is has this power law. In mean field, this power law is one. And we have calculated this power law to one loop. And if you look at the Narayan-Fisher conjecture, if you generalize it and so on, you get this, which is compatible with this. So we have now tendency to believe this. And this will be the conjecture for local velocity exponents. So you can go on like this and derive scaling relations for various exponents, local or global. And for instance, if you look here at the exponent for the distribution of global velocity, in short range case, so in four dimension, it would be one. In three, it goes down. As you lower the dimension, eventually becomes negative. 5 minutes, my God. Are you sure? Because Lars was talking a lot. So we do find indeed that it's negative, because if you, we did numerics with Colton, and we find that this exponent is consistent with this conjecture. This was a very difficult numerics, but finally it worked. So this conjecture seems to work for the global velocity. Shapes at fixed durations. So as you know, in mean field, this is the formula for the shape, which is the velocity as a function of time for fixed duration of avalanche. And it depends only on this scaling variable. And it has some universal form when the times are small, so it's hard to calculate. We arrive to this formula. And the referee report I read this morning said that, I don't know if the referee is in the room, but we were inspired by the Nature paper of Stefan and collaborator to do the calculation. I wish it was true, because this calculation took a lot of time. It was very complicated and long, so we actually started well before, but okay. So we arrived to this formula, and this is magically what Stefan and collaborator arrived at by just looking at the data and analyzing the data, so that's really very nice. And this function f of x is a little bit more complicated than the one that they found. If you actually calculate it, it has this relatively horrible form. It turns out that it's a case where, well, they are lucky, or we are unlucky, I don't know. But this function, which looks very complicated, can be very well approximated by the straight line. Okay, so in fact, you can essentially approximate it by this, with a non-trivial value for this asymmetry, okay? So we were a little bit disappointed, but then we were happy to have at least something. And then we looked at their, bit more at their Nature paper, and we found that the asymmetry was completely outside of what they found, okay? We predict a negative asymmetry, and they observe from the numerics and not from the experiment. In the experiment, they cannot find any asymmetry, probably not enough resolution. But in the numerics, in one dimension, it's positive. Okay, so what's going on? Well, fortunately, Lasse Larsson came to us and told us that in two dimensions there is some hope because the asymmetry is negative. So maybe there is hope to connect. And in fact, this is more recent data by Lasse, who did a fantastic simulation now in three dimensions, in two dimensions, in one dimension. And this is, I'm plotting the difference between the shape and the shape in mean field. And in three dimensions, the theory and the data are fitting pretty well. So the epsilon expansion seems to be okay. But of course, the disagreement becomes worse as you lower the dimension, except in this part of the plot. So for the second part of the asymmetry curve, the epsilon expansion looks like it's doing an extremely good job. But here, on the beginning of the avalanche, it doesn't seem to work very well. So there is some physics to be understood. What's happening at the beginning of the avalanche, which we don't know yet, but would be interesting to know. So the fixed size shape is another object. And as Gianfranco has shown before, this is a prediction from mean field theory. And this is the fit to his data, which can be done by a single parameter, which is this characteristic time. But this is most, and if you want now to calculate the corrections to this function, universal function, away from the mean field. So this is what you get to first order in epsilon. And this is the prediction. So the new function for short-range disorder will start with a power law here, and we'll have some tail like this, which we can calculate. And we are now in the process of doing comparison with Lasse data, and also hopefully soon with Gianfranco data. Okay, so we looked also at the BBM model with relaxation and found that this shape at fixed size exhibit now long tails. So this is this type of model which are supposed to illustrate, take into account eddy currents. So we find effects which are compatible with what was found by Zapperi and collaborators. So how much time do I have to talk about SENPIE's?
1 minute.
Okay, so SENPIE's model, just fasten your seatbelt. SENPIE models are integer eights on square lattice, and as you know, the Bakhtang-Wiesenfeld model, it tells you that the SENPIE at a given site will topple if this height is bigger than some threshold. And when it topples, there's 2D grains which are distributed among the neighbors, so the number of grains is conserved. Now, this was conjectured a while ago by Alan to be in the same class as deepening of charge density wave. And we had some evidence, more evidence of that recently, but there is no proof of this at this stage, so it's still a conjecture which should be checked. Now, there are other SENPIE's which are stochastic SENPIE's, like the RISE-PI model, where you choose a threshold randomly. Every time there is a toppling, it's renewed. And the MANA model, where the way the grains are distributed is stochastic. So it is believed for a while that these are in the same big class of SENPIE model, and there are more of them. It's a whole zoo of models, which is called the MANA class. And it's been conjectured that this is related to deepening of interface. There is a nice picture of sandpile activity, sandpile toppling in terms of activity, which relates sandpiles to absorbing phase transition. What are absorbing phase transition? They are phase transition from, they are non-equilibrium phase transition from an inactive phase to an active phase, and the standard model for it is directed percolation, where you choose weights at random on bonds and you connect them to the seed, like in percolation, except it's directed, and you can also see it as a reaction diffusion model. If you go from time t to t plus one, or propagation of an epidemic, and so on. Now, in directed percolation, it's well known that there is a transition at some PC with some density which has some critical behavior and length scale which have critical behavior. And the directed percolation has a very nice expression in terms of a stochastic partial differential equation. So this is the directed percolation. This describes completely directed percolation. And of course, people have looked at this equation and calculated things with it and calculated the exponents to order epsilon square or something. So the question is this related? So you can think of this as an avalanche and the space-time diagram of an avalanche in a sandpile. Now, is this related really to sandpiles, the directed percolation? Well, it was found, in particular by Stefano and collaborators, that it is not exactly directed percolation. It's another class, which is called conserved directed percolation, which appears to be related to sandpiles, stochastic sandpiles. The reason is that there is a conservation law, which is the conservation of number of grains. So you have to couple this equation to a conserved field, which itself has a conserved equation. So rho here is the activity. And phi, you can think of it as the local number of grains, the density of grain. So it has been conjectured for a long time that this mana class of sandpile was in the conserved directed percolation class. In other words, that the CDP system here is effective filtering for mana sandpile. And there is literature going for over 10 years on this and a lot of evidence from numerics. And what we did recently with Kai is to actually map exactly the sandpile, not the sandpile, sorry, the CDP, conserved directed percolation equations, directly to deepening. It turns out that it's actually a simple change of variable, which allows you to do that. Again, you write the activity as the derivative of the velocity field. In other words, the position of the interface is like the total number of topplings from time zero at position x. And this is something which, of course, has been, I mean, it's a standard. This is a standard thing. But the less standard thing is to define this force. And if you do that, you can really rewrite this equation doing some change of variable. And for instance, I'm just going to show you along this special line, but it's more general. And you can, if you want to know more, you can read the paper. You can show that this force is actually a pinning force. So it can be really written as f of u. And you arrive at an equation for an interface in a random medium whose pinning force satisfies Einstein-Uhlenbeck process. So it converges if you are driving long enough to this short range type of disorder. And I'm almost done. So it means that there is a single big universality class which describes interface depinning, stochastic sandpiles, and conserved directed percolation, which includes a lot of reaction diffusion model with, for instance, inert species and things like this. So my conclusions, I've showed you a precise theory for avalanche. For interface, the correct mean field theory can describe space, and it's this Brownian force model. We are actually calculating other things like the shape, spatial shape, and distribution of extensions and things like this. Beyond mean field, there are scaling relations. Some of them have been checked. Others give values for exponents which are a bit strange and that our experimentalist friend do not at all believe them, or they refuse to see them in their experiments. OK, so we have to understand why. I mean, it's not clear. Because just scaling, it should work, but OK. And then there is an important open question, which has really been in the field for a while, which is if you take the ABBM model at finite velocity, you find exponents which depends on the velocity. Now, if you think of the finite range disorder, this is not natural. So we need to understand what happens exactly at finite velocity. And for stochastic sandpiles, there is a unique universality class for a large number of models. It would be nice if there are generalization of the stochastic PDEs to describe quench KPZ class. And why not glasses and yielding? After all you have to write is some equation for the activity, and you have to just guess the terms correctly and get the right phenomenology. Why not? And there is still open the question of the original sandpile of Bach. Is it really the same as periodic deepening? Okay, I'm done.
Nice presentation.
I was real afraid.
In your calculation, can you look at temperature effect or the fatigue effect that possible?
Yes. So there is some approach for creep, which works quite well, but at this stage it doesn't give a very precise description. So it has to be worked out more in detail. I mean, we can get the nonlinear creep low and things like this, but we don't have handle on the space structure. And also the thermal rounding is still open.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you this in public, which I've been asking you before. If your interface is not elastic, do some of these techniques, can they be applied? Like if your interface is allowed to tear.
If our interface is what?
Allowed to tear.
Ah, tear. Okay, I see. Okay. So you mean plastic deformation or really tearing? Well, I mean, you know, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, I...
But do the techniques,
some
of the techniques you think?
Okay, I mean, right now, the Middleton property is very important if we manage to go around it for the FRG. But now if we think in terms of these reaction diffusion models, maybe there is a way to find some new equations like this, which could work. So,
I just wanted to make a remark that a lot of very smart people have been trying to do this kind of calculation for a long time, and this machinery that you've developed seems extremely powerful, and seems to be answering lots of questions that you can test experimentally, and it's very cool.
Oh, thank you. I was expecting a but.
Okay, so if there are no more questions for Pierre, since Lars did take up.
Yes.
So if there are no more questions, let's thank Pierre again, and we'll move on in the interest of time.